This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Harry Golden is no longer a household name in North Carolina, but at one point in the mid-20th century, he may well have been the most famous North Carolinian in the country. Harry Golden was a Jewish-American writer who grew up in New York City's Lower East Side in the early 1900s. He's best known for founding the Carolina Israelite, a monthly paper published in Charlotte. His writing and commentary was sharp, provocative, and humorous.
The best job on this earth, better job than Ben-Gurion has, is to be a lone Jew in a small southern town. There's nothing like this nowhere, believe me. The Goyim God, this fellow like the God, the Confederate Monument. They say he's our Jew.
Harry Golden sharing one of his many reflections on life in the American South. His writing about race and civil rights attracted national attention from figures ranging from Johnny Carson to Martin Luther King Jr. My guest today wrote the first comprehensive biography of Harry Golden, Carolina Israelite, How Harry Golden Made Us Care About Jews, the South, and Civil Rights. Kimberly Marlowe Hartnett is in town for a local reading tonight at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh and joins me in the studio now. Kimberly, welcome to the State. It's good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
The thing that surprises me is that this is the first biography of this extraordinary man. But tell us about, give us the story of Harry Golden. Where did he come from and how did he get to Charlotte?
Well, the University of North Carolina Press fortunately saw this as the great story that it is. It's been several years in the making. And the great thing about Harry's story, I think, is it's such an American story. He used to say he lived in a time of great headlines. And it's so true. He was an immigrant on the Lower East Side, part of that great wave of Jewish immigrants who changed our country so much. And he was on Wall Street in the 20s, where he did very, very well, well enough to land himself in jail for a while.
That was when they used to jail people in Wall Street for breaking the law. Remember that?
That is
Remember
so
those days?
True. Yeah. And it was a scandal back then. Can you believe it?
Yes. People didn't glorify them. They actually put them in jail.
That's right.
So he spent like 5 years in jail, right?
Yeah. Well, he got a 5-year sentence. He got a little time off for good behavior in the prison library. But he left New York and moved south. It was such a scandal at that time. That really you had to pretty much sneak out of town in the dark of night. He changed his name. His last name was originally Goldhirsch, and it went to Goldhurst, and then it became Golden when he moved south. That happened in the early 40s, and he was drawn to the Charlotte area because he had connections to the labor press, and he worked for a paper there called the Charlotte Labor Journal and Dixie Farm News. So that's what got him to Charlotte, and he went on to start his wonderful small newspaper, the Carolina Israelite, which was really a blog in disguise. There just weren't blogs yet or an internet.
In the sense that it was mostly his musings on the things happening.
Absolutely. And short essay form was his strength. And over time, he got quite a following, and he became increasingly vocal in the paper and in speeches about the race situation in the South. So, you know, that time and place and who he was pretty much guaranteed to be listened to, sometimes with shock, sometimes with disgust. Almost always people couldn't help but laugh. He was a very funny guy.
Place it in time. When does he start really becoming outspoken about race?
Well, he started the paper in 44. And he became known by the early 50s, and then his first of more than 20 books came out in 58, Only in America, which was an enormous bestseller. And at that point, it really took off. His celebrity really took off then.
Again, you talked about the short form, his incisive view of what was happening, and his great wit. And we actually have tape of Harry when he's talking about these things. Let's listen.
In my city, for years, there was a high school, a white high school, which had a linotype machine where the seniors could learn this wonderful trade, which pays well, very honorable. And the Negro high school, the separate but equal deal, no such thing. Teach them various service professions or trades. So when the white men get together and talk about the race issue, they talk about how the Negroes want white women. That's what they want. And when the Negroes get together, they talk about a linotype machine.
Writer and humorist Harry Golden from an album released in 1962. I mean, this is how well-known this guy is. He's doing albums. He's got best-selling books, right? And we're previewing the biography of his life. Kimberly Marlowe Hartnett is here. The book is called Carolina Israelite. Who was subscribing to the Israelite? Was it, I suspect, a largely Jewish audience, but was there a bigger audience for the paper?
Yes, and at its peak, you know, he had about 55,000 subscribers, which is huge for a publication like that. The peak, incidentally, came after he was outed by someone anonymously in the national press for having been a jailbird. So, of course, very typical of America. We do love our bad boys, and especially bad boys from Wall Street, I guess. But Harry used to do something in the early days, and I don't know that he ever really stopped doing this, but he would take the name of a famous person, a politician, an actor, some other celebrity, and write in the Carolina Israelite that, you know, Charlton Heston was a avid reader and subscriber to the Carolina Israelite without any grain of truth to it. And what's amazing is that the people would often become subscribers and friends. And he just... You know, sometimes his enormous nerve was really what drove his celebrity.
He had to have a nerve. I mean, you would think that to be a Jew in the South is you would want not to be outspoken about this thing called white supremacy, which by the 1950s was now in some doubt. That took a lot of nerve, didn't it?
It did. And I've thought a lot about, and people have asked me along the trail here as I've been introducing this book in the South, you know, where did that courage come from? And I'm not sure there's a simple answer to it, but he had a lot of it.
And it was incisive, too. I mean, the way in which it wasn't just this is unfair, it's not nice, it's not moral. He had a real keen insight into the ways in which this mechanism, white supremacy and Jim Crow, worked. Let's listen to another clip of Harry Golden.
Governor Hollings of South Carolina says, "Oh, Negroes don't want integration. My maid told me so." So he says, the governor of a state. And he means it. This is a fantastic thing. They live in a dream world. She calls her maid in and says, "Nettie, what do you all think of this here Supreme Court decision?" Nettie says, "Miss Emily, we never seized the papers." That night, the maid goes home and says to her husband, "Jim, get a move on you. Let's go down to that NAACP meeting and light a fire under the Integration Committee." That's what she said.
The writer and humorist Harry Golden, an esteemed cultural figure in the 1900s, and the subject of my guest book. The book is called Carolina Israelite, How Harry Golden Made Us Care About Jews, the South, and Civil Rights. Kimberly Marlowe Hartnett is with me today. And influential as well. I mean, there was the concept known as the vertical Negro, which has quite a bit of traction, or did here in Durham, North Carolina. A guy named E.J. Mutt Evans, who became the first Jewish mayor of Durham. Talk about the vertical Negro and the kind of the way this idea passed through these communities.
Well, it was Mr. Evans' original idea in his department store here. Had a lunch counter, as many did in those days, and you know, it was an odd but known fact that if you were standing in line, white and black together at the bank or at a lunch counter, no problem. If you sat together in public, that was a problem in school or in restaurants. And one of the ways that Durham and Charlotte, that had a small restaurant that did this as well, really avoided some of the really bad, painful violence over segregation was for the business community to rally and, you know, quietly integrate some of these more social settings. So Golden saw this and gave it his own particular spin. He called it the – he had several Golden plans. That was one, the first one. And it really put him on the national map. And it really shows what he did so well, which was – to simply describe some ridiculous behavior that, in his opinion, and of course I think he was right, was really dragging down a community, a state, a people by, you know, raising yet another generation with this crazy behavior. And by simply describing it and ridiculing it in not necessarily terribly mean-spirited way, he got across to people in a way that I don't think he would have as a real a lecturer or right. preacher.
What was his influence outside of the South? I mean, we talked about, and you've even got pictures of him with Bobby Kennedy, John Kennedy, some of the greats, you know, sort of in American culture and political life at the time. How influential was he with them? How well did they know him?
Well, I think he was very influential. I think that certainly many famous people, many politicians, they liked him. They wanted him around because his celebrity was useful to them. But also, Golden loved politicians. He understood some of the pressures and challenges of that world. He had a phenomenal memory. He could handicap a race very quickly. And when he was alone with these people, Robert Kennedy being a good example, he was a loyal fan and trustworthy, but not a yes man. He might go on the campaign trail for the Kennedys, which he did several times, and talk about them in glowing terms, as one would expect. But, you know, he alone might say, hey, you're not talking enough about poor people, or you went on too long about this or that. He was a very gifted speechwriter, and he had done a lot of that work early in his years in Charlotte to make ends meet. And he was known more than once for writing speeches for candidates in debates who were facing each other, and no one the wiser that Harry had written the scripts for both people. Yes.
Well, you talked about his courage and not being a yes man and somebody who has very much the courage of his convictions, but also, I mean, a keen insight again into his plays. You know, we might think if you're looking at what it means to be a Jew in the South in the 50s, that might be a scary proposition for all of us. Harry seemed to understand that that was a kind of a special place, and he talked about it in, again, his inimitable humorous way.
My Presbyterian neighbors out there have acquired a kind of proprietary pride in me, you know. But I think it goes back to way in the beginning. In the early 1940s, I was invited to deliver a book review at the basement of one of the big churches. It was Christ Episcopal Church, the largest, most fashionable. And must have been 400 or 500 of the leading citizens there. And I said, before I review my book, I'd like to tell you folks a secret. I hope you take it kindly. I said, you know, if Jesus were to include Charlotte, North Carolina, on his itinerary during the second coming, I'd be the first one he'd contact here. And they looked at me first surprised and shocked a little bit. And I said, no, I'm not, no blasphemy. This is right. In the first place, I'm a cousin, a kinsman. And then he would need an interpreter. You don't suppose he talks this you all business? And then finally, he would need a trained reporter. He would want to know. He'd say, Harry, what are Episcopalians? And I could tell him. And the folks loved it, really. To this day, when they meet me on the street, say, hello, Harry, but there's a gleam in their eye. They'd say, don't forget me, boy.
Clip from writer and humorist Harry Golden, who founded the Carolina Israelite newspaper. His biography is written by Kimberly Marlowe Hartnett. She's with me here today. So what happened to the paper and what happened to Harry?
Well, Harry continued the paper more or less monthly until 1968. Occasionally he would miss a month, and he would simply meet his obligation to his subscribers by sending out a past issue with a new date on it. And no one seemed to mind too much. But he continued that on. His health began to decline, and it coincided with really a lot of changes in the movement, becoming the civil rights movement, becoming more militant. His brand of humor and what came to sound more like gradualism was less attractive. So, as is the case, I think, with a lot of activists who start out leading a group, saying outrageous things, pushing for very dramatic change and getting it, When some of those gains have been made, they are often pushed back into the wings, and I think it's very difficult for those activists. Certainly was difficult for Harry, especially given that it coincided with his later years and his health declining a bit. So he faded away a bit. And people often ask me as I'm talking about the book, hey, if this guy was so famous, you know, how did he disappear? And I have to remind them, first, the business that I just said about the changes in the movement, but also he was pre-internet and people disappeared all the time. And now, of course, we can't disappear even if we want to.
Yeah, that's the sad part about now. But tell us about his lasting legacy in Charlotte. How has he remembered there and I guess across North Carolina, but in particular in Charlotte?
Well, I spoke in Charlotte the other night at the Jewish Community Center, wonderful program that the Levine Museum of the South and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library had co-sponsored with the community center. And there was more than 120 people there, many of whom had read his books, more than a few who had known him or certainly remembered him. I think in the Jewish community, he is remembered mostly in a positive way. He was an embarrassment in some ways. He was a loose cannon. There are still people who will say, yeah, he was great, but boy, you know, sometimes he'd open his mouth and we'd really just squirm. But I think for the most part, Charlotte in general is proud of him, as they should be. And I hope they're also proud of themselves for welcoming him the way they did. I've often said if Golden had gone to Birmingham or Atlanta, wonderful places, but they were bigger, their brand of reaction to civil rights was different, he might not have found the home there that he did in Charlotte.
Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today. Kimberly Marlowe Hartnett is the author of the new biography, Harry Golden, about Harry Golden. It's called Carolina Israelite, How Harry Golden Made His Care About Jews, the South, and Civil Rights. And you can find out more at her website, stateofthings.org. Kimberly is going to be reading from her book at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tonight at 7 o'clock. Stateofthings.org is where to find out more. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.